following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 29th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to on the show today, man. More college football conversation, more Auburn football conversation. May have to dip into some Auburn basketball conversation as well as the exhibition game from over the weekend. And didn't get a great chance to dive into that yesterday, but may have some time to do that today. I hope you're all doing well on this Tuesday. Beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area, and Tuesdays are a lot of fun because we get to dive a little bit deeper into what happened in the Auburn game from over the weekend, what happened around college football over the weekend, right? Mondays seem to be the just general reaction to what happened from Saturday, but then you get to take Tuesday and you get to take the Auburn game and select games and just say, all right, let's dive into this a little bit. What really happened this weekend? And so that's what we're going to do on the show today. Phone lines are wide open on this Tuesday afternoon, 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. If you want to get in and be a part of the show that way, you can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And excited to have you along for the show. And also a guy that's with me every Tuesday here throughout football season and for the foreseeable future, the voice of at least Scott Academy, Christian Griffin, is in the studio as well. Man, great to see you. How was your weekend? You're just now getting back in town, huh?
We are, yeah. Literally about an hour ago. A very, very busy weekend for those that missed the Friday show. Had the Saturday fall wedding that you feel like is a sin within itself. But watching about the first 8 to 10 minutes of the Auburn game, I was almost thanking the wedding because I was not wanting to watch any more of it. And then finally was able to get home and watch the fourth quarter, which I was also dreading because of Auburn football.
Sure.
But three words, I guess you could say, for everything: seeing is believing. And that's with Auburn winning a fourth quarter that we haven't seen in quite a while. That is Auburn running the football, despite Hugh Freeze saying multiple times how many times he wanted to throw the ball.
Yeah, we're going to get to that today.
But with him saying that he was seeing six, seven, even eight guys in the box where it was killing him not to go to a play or to a pass, but continuing to trust everything. So that's seeing is believing. And then also with Coach Freeze, seeing that adjustments were being made. So seeing is believing was kind of my whole take throughout the entire weekend, and especially with Auburn football. But happy to be back here. Happy to be back in Auburn. It feels like it's been a very hectic weekend. Take the next 2 hours, chill out, talk a little bit of college football, and see where it goes.
Yeah, well, happy belated birthday to you. You were out of town for your birthday, so hopefully you had a good time. But back to business here on a Tuesday afternoon. And again, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. And we'll start, Christian, today, as we normally do on a Tuesday, kind of looking at what happened around college football. Uncle T-Bone and I had a chance to do this a little bit yesterday, but want to dive a little bit deeper into what's going on. You look at the latest AP poll, right, that came out this Sunday. And just to remind everybody, a week from tonight, the first college football playoff rankings will come out. And that is a wild that we are almost into the month of November. November 1 is this Friday. But we're also, I keep telling people, we're going to get an idea, right? We're going to get an idea of what the college football playoff committee is going to do and what they're thinking and what they are rewarding as of right now and what they are, I guess, taking away from teams based off of their record and the wins and the losses that they have. And there are still a ton of games to be played and some really impactful games to be played this weekend, this coming weekend included in that. But you look at the latest AP poll, right, with the playoff poll coming out a week from today, not going to go through all of it, but I think the top 15 is at least relevant right now. Oregon 1, Georgia at 2. Oregon had all but one of the first place votes. I don't know how Georgia got one, but that's okay. Penn State at 3. Ohio State 4 after a shaky performance against Nebraska. That sets up a top 4 showdown this weekend between the Nittany Lions and the Buckeyes. That game being played in Happy Valley. Miami at 5, Texas 6, Tennessee 7, Notre Dame 8, BYU 9. One of those few undefeated teams swimming out around there. Texas A&M at 10 after their impressive win over LSU. Iowa State at 11, Clemson at 11 also. We have a tie in the AP poll, which I think that's dumb, but it is what it is. Clemson quietly just hanging around, just doing what they got to do over the last few weeks. Indiana 13, they're one of the undefeateds as well. Alabama 14 and Boise State at 15. Tell you what, let me give you the top 20. 16 is LSU, Kansas State 17, 18 is Pitt. They are undefeated. Ole Miss at 19 and SMU at 20.
Very interested to see when that first college football playoff ranking comes out. If they throw the top group of five team, which right now is Boise State, if they throw them in that 12 spot or if they reward them with a little bit bigger of a role. Again, they're one of the group of five teams will get an automatic bid into the college football playoff, just like the top four, or I guess the power four, since there's not the Pac-12 this year. But so the four automatic bids plus the group of five automatic bid. But everybody's kind of thinking that that group of five team will be a 12 seed. But with how Boise State's playing, I mean, if Boise State wins out, their one loss would be a 3-point loss in Eugene, which is a great loss.
Which I hate that.
I was going to say, it's a word that we don't like to use. But when your one loss is in week two to the number one team in the country, it's hard to say that there's many teams that are playing better football than you are. So really interested to see where everything comes out. I'm also interested to see where Notre Dame ends up. I know that they can't be placed higher than a certain ranking just because they don't play in a true conference. I also think it's a little bit comical that a loss to UNI just means nothing. And you can
just be thrown, we've just written that off.
You can just be thrown right back into the top eight. A little bit crazy to me.
Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. And James, you kick things off here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. What's up?
Hey, James K-Bag.
Oh, what's up, K-Bag? How are you, man?
I'm doing fine. Hey, I got an answer for you on how Georgia got one vote for number one and Oregon didn't get them all.
Okay.
Whoever's voting for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, I guarantee you they voted for Georgia.
I could actually pull up and see. There's some Twitter accounts that'll tweet out the entire, because the AP posts that. I mean, they produce that. You can see how every voter voted their entire top 25. So if somebody has that, Christian may be able to find it here in a second and see who did give Georgia that number one vote. Because, I mean, somebody did. I just don't know who.
I'd be willing to bet you a Warburger and a bucket of beer at the Plaza Bar that it was somebody at the AJC.
Well, you can always buy me that regardless if it's on a bet, K-Bag.
Hey, buddy, you know what? I'm in. But, hey, I know you said you wanted to get to it, and I got a few minutes here before I got to hop out of the truck. But
okay.
Talking about Hugh Freeze saying how he wanted to throw the football so bad when they were loading the box.
Yeah.
You know, Man, I'm glad he didn't, because, I mean, you think about all the Auburn running backs in the history that we've had, you know, just going back into the 80s with Lionel James and then Stephen Davis, Carnell and Ronnie, Trey Smith, you know, all those guys. You know, when you start getting running backs that get consistent carries within a time frame of the game and they start to get that lather working and they start to – you know, feel, you know, the pads, you know, that running backs have to get into a rhythm. I know in the world of college football that we live in today with all these, you know, RPOs and these quick passes and all these wide receivers, running backs need to feel the game of football in order to, you know, get their feet up under them and catch a rhythm. Lord knows I'm glad you did start throwing the football, because that's what Jarquez needs. Think about Tank, you know, just a few years ago when he would, even though as bad as we were, you know, he'd get 25 carries and he would really start to wear down defense. The offensive lineman, it's a heck of a lot easier to block a run play than it is a pass play, you know, just from a defensive blocking or an aggressive blocking scheme there. I hate that you said that, but dadgum, I'm glad he didn't start throwing the football even with eight men in the box.
And we'll talk about this, I'm sure, a little bit later, where it feels like 75% of this unit on the offensive line is built to run the football.
No doubt.
And that's when
it.
You see the success rate really, really go high. And that's when you're seeing Jarquez break off big gains. I think he's averaging 7.3 K-Bag. I unfortunately have to let you know that the burger and the bucket of beer might be on your tab, because it is the San Jose Mercury News reporter with the number one poll going to the University of Georgia.
What day you want to go down there, K-Bag? I'll meet you anytime, man.
What is that donk doing with a vote?
John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News. Big time name.
Whoa. They must have George Soros funding that. But I'm a man of my word, Jacob. I catch you out to Plaza Bar and tell me, buddy.
That's right. Appreciate the call, K-Back. Good to hear from you, buddy. 334-321-1390. I mean, look. Maybe they got Georgia in their blood. I don't know. I mean, what? I don't know. Look, I know a couple of people personally that have a vote in that AP poll, and it's really, really cool. I don't know the process in that. I mean, I think I could be totally wrong on this. I think you just get picked. I mean, there may be an application. I have no idea. I mean, I'm young. I'm fresh in my career. I'm not considered for an AP poll vote, and I don't really know if I want to have a vote in the AP poll and have all that published every single week. I don't know. I don't know if I want all that responsibility, but I do want to tap into this really quickly because we are going to get to it more. What'd you find?
Just saying, he does work with the University of Southern California as well, and USC and Oregon being a big rivalry.
We found it. We figured it out. Yep, there you go, K-Bag. You were on the right track, buddy.
Yeah, works on Trojans Live, which without context could be one thing, but works with the University of Southern California and a big rivalry with the Oregon Ducks, and that's, yeah.
Something doesn't smell right there on that one.
It's crazy how that took me 14 seconds to find.
That's what I'm saying, man. Get me out of that. Nope, I'm good. I don't want to be a part of that. We are going to talk more about this, but K-Bag is absolutely right. In terms of running the football, especially with Jarquez Hunter for Auburn, he is a guy that this is such an old saying, and it's such a common used, overused probably, but he just gets fresher as the game goes on. But Jarquez Hunter, you saw it. You saw that come to life against Kentucky on Saturday. It just seemed like he got a little bit faster and a little bit stronger and a little bit more confident every time he touched the football. And to your point, something T-Bone and I brought up a little bit yesterday that I would love to talk more about today is, man, there's no knock on this offensive line, but pass pro, it's just not there. It's not good. They're whiffing on blocks. They're missing their reads. They're not rotating properly. And it's just bad news bears. But in terms of run blocking, man, they're really good. And this goes back to the whole core conversation that we've had in terms of frustrations with Hugh Freeze is call the game to your team's strength. Don't call the game to what you think is going to work, right? You adjust off of your team. Don't make your team adjust off of you. And we saw that for the very first time this season on Saturday against Kentucky when, yes, Hugh Freeze, you can pull up the quote from his press conference yesterday. He kind of chuckled and admitted that he wanted to throw the football really, really bad. It was itching at him. It was eating him alive inside. He wanted to throw the football so bad, even with stacked boxes from Kentucky, but they kept running the football. And how many times this year were we told the week leading up to a game, this team just doesn't give up a whole lot of rushing yards. This team doesn't allow many runs, yada, yada. So Auburn just said, well, They've been good at it all year, so we're just not even going to test them. We're not even going to try to do X, Y, or Z against this team because, well, they stopped it before. So they'll do it again. We'll just go away from that. We'll just toss that out of the playbook altogether. And they finally did not do that on Saturday, and he walked out of there with a win.
And to highlight even more, he didn't do it in the second half. Jarquez Hunter had 6 carries for 64 yards in the first half of the game. He finished with 23 carries and 278 yards of offense.
Stupid, man.
So, I mean, I'm not a big math guy, but that is 17 carries for 214 yards and a half of football.
Which averages out to what in the second half per carry?
12.5.
Good Lord. 12.5 yards per every time he touched the football.
Every time you touch the football, you're moving the chains.
Which, in the second
granted,
half.
Again, that's all well, per that's average with 40s still. And 50-yard runs in between. But it's just crazy to think. He had 6 carries in the first half. He had 9 in the first drive of the third quarter. You know what Auburn did?
Scored.
Drove down the field and scored a touchdown.
Which was the exact opposite of what they did their first 11 plays of the ball game, yeah. Where they threw the football.
Yep.
And we're thinking, ah, great, here we go, right? That's what T-Bone and I talked about yesterday was, well, here we go again, down 10-0. Jarquez has yet to touch the football, and it's going to be another long night in Lexington. But Hugh Freeze learned. He adapted. He overcame.
And how nice is it now that he has seen something that worked that wasn't what he wanted to do?
Bingo.
And that's what I started off the show by saying, seeing is believing. He now sees what everybody has been trying to say because there hasn't been a true opportunity for him to have that experience. Well, there's been opportunities. He hasn't necessarily gone with it.
It's your aha moment.
Right. Of now, shoot, okay, maybe I don't have to RPO every single time. There was a point in the second half going with Jarquez where Peyton Thorne was 16 of his last 17. And you know why? Because it wasn't an RPO. It was either you hand the ball off to Jarquez Hunter, you took the snap and found your one receiver, or you play action pass and somebody was wide open. It simplifies
what a crazy
everything.
Idea. What a crazy concept. You know, if people would listen to this show more, they'd get good information. I'm not saying we're college coaches, but
no.
Lord, we have phone callers that say that.
Yeah. I think Peyton Thorne started. It was either 5 of 10 and had that gross interception, or it was 5 of 11. Finished 20 of 26. Threw for 172 yards. Exactly what you ask for him to do.
Take out the first quarter. He played a hell of a game.
And that's all that you can ask for him. That's what we've talked about all year long. If you give us a B or a B-plus quarterback, and that's exactly what you got in the Kentucky game with an A-plus running back room and an A-minus run game on your offensive line, you put those three things together, and it's crazy what the season could look like, but now you have the glimpse of what we've been trying to plead for you for 6 or 7 weeks.
Let's take our first break here in hour number one. We'll come back, get back to college football later on in the hour. We'll dive deeper into Auburn and Kentucky as we just relish in a win for the first time in a long time. We'll have all that for you and more here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. This is On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins, Christian Griffin next to me as well. And want to get back on the college football side of things. We'll talk more Auburn here coming up in just a little bit. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. I know you were at a wedding, and I know you were, you know, doing the whole birthday trip thing, but I know you took in a lot of college football, and you've at least been able to catch up if you did miss anything. So, in your mind, Christian, some of the biggest, most impactful results from college football this past Saturday?
Ooh.
Or Friday.
Yeah.
Or Thursday, or Wednesday, or Tuesday, since we apparently play college football 7 days a week.
Oh, I have zero complaints about it.
Oh, I'm not worried about it at all. I love it. But it just seems there's always a game
going
on.
There is. There is always a game. I think we're right in the home stretch, or right in the heart, actually, of a college football or an NFL game on every single day up until Thanksgiving.
And yesterday was the sports equinox. I failed to mention that yesterday on the show, but you had, hockey, World Series Baseball, NBA, and NFL all happening at one time last night.
What a day. What a day.
Did we take advantage of it? Kind of.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
We watched it. I mean, wouldn't say
a little angrily. But
yeah, very much so.
But first off, I mean, a self-pat on the back for my one game missing on Friday for our ESPN, the SEC Challenge, was the one game that I was very happy losing, which was Auburn and Kentucky.
That was the one game. Yeah.
So
you did pick A&M to beat LSU.
I did. I picked Arkansas to kill Mississippi State. I think both of y'all were on Mississippi State as well.
I did pick Mississippi State.
So
yeah.
That was a good one for me.
That was a want more than a heart pick. There's got to be something.
Wasn't
that disappointing though? I mean, that for what they've been doing. I mean, they've been hanging around with people. And that out of all teams in Starkville, you're going to let Arkansas do that to you?
It's like Mississippi State's better away from home.
Yeah, it's what
it's like. The cowbells go away, and it's like, oh, we can think.
Dude,
we can play football.
Make them go away permanently. They're so bad.
They are so bad. Game of the week, I mean, I think the highlight of everything is the A&M-LSU game, and not necessarily the final score, but how the final score came to be with Connor Wegman getting benched, essentially. It'll be interesting to see if I almost said Jimbo Fisher. Wow.
Hey-o.
If they go back to Connor Wegman, or if they stick with Marcel Reed, who only had to throw the ball twice coming into the game, and I mean, just absolutely ran all over this A&M team. Had, I mean, 9 carries for 62 yards and 3 touchdowns for Mike Elko's squad. I mean, that is exactly what they've wanting, and you've been hearing a bunch of people say that Texas A&M has always just been that one missing piece away, and it's really starting to get scary because this team is really, really good. Defense continues to show up when you don't think that they're going to, and they keep finding ways to win football games.
Yeah, people keep saying that it just looks different with this A&M team, that it feels a little bit different. And I wish I had – I've got some buddies there in Aggieland and my friends over at Texags. I need to get back in contact with them for the show because, you know, I was texting with them a couple of weeks ago. I think it was after the Arkansas game, and it was just – they were like, man, this team's so much better than what they're playing. But then they've turned around and they beat the brakes off Missouri. They handle Mississippi State, again, a team that I think is better than what they're putting on the field. And then you pull away and beat LSU on a Saturday night, the biggest game in college football. And you start to look at that schedule, and it's not easy, but it's doable for them. At South Carolina, home versus New Mexico State, at Auburn, and then Texas, which we've all said could end up being an elimination type of game for the SEC and for the college football playoff.
It very, very much could. And when you compare that schedule with a couple other teams in the SEC with their schedule that they have going on, I mean, you look at Billy Napier in Florida that have Georgia upcoming this week. I mean, that schedule in November is an absolute gauntlet. That's what we've talked about, where if Napier can even survive November, it's a win for him and his squad. So
I think we're all surprised that he's still there.
I would agree, and even if they choose to go somewhere, I mean, you're going to let him go the rest of the season now because, again, no intern's going to want to step in and be like, hey, your first 4 games,
you're going 0-4.
Or you're going to be 0-4 on your record. Texas Vanderbilt was also, I don't want to say a bit of a surprise, because I think a bunch of people were not on Vanderbilt to win, but on the cover line, because sure. I think it was like 16.5. Mm-hmm. And the 3 points obviously play a little bit more of a factor, with it being Vanderbilt scoring with a minute left to make it a 3-point game. BYU and UCF, where UCF was a 2.5-point favorite, and Gus Malzahn doing what the Fighting Gus Malzahns always find a way to do. The Fighting Mormons find a way to stay undefeated, 37-24. And another one that seems to get overlooked by a lot of teams, this Illinois squad is actually really good, but Oregon absolutely did whatever they wanted, winning 38-9. Dylan Gabriel, again, the quarterback from Oklahoma, doing whatever he wants on the offensive side of the football. I love watching a lefty quarterback, and he spins it so nice. And Eugene just continuing to do what they do, and everybody, I guess, from except for the San Jose Mercury News
whatever
is loving everything that him and Dan Lanning are doing up there.
What does that mean? Run out of somebody's garage out there? Whatever, man. Eugene and Oregon, that's a good team, and they're only getting better. In the Big Ten, they've still got a couple of big games left, but Yeah, man. I'm still not sold on Penn State. They've got Ohio State this weekend. I'm not sold on Ohio State after they played against Nebraska, but that's Big Ten talk. We'll talk more Auburn and Kentucky, dive deeper into what happened in Lexington and how the Tigers can build on it. That's coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goetz. He is Christian Griffin. And let's get to the phone lines, which are wide open on this Tuesday afternoon. 334-321-1390. Terry, you're on the line. What's up, man?
Hey, Jacob. Hey, Christian. How y'all doing today?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Jacob, did Hugh Freeze really say that last night? I don't listen to a lot of the press conferences because just the same old talk a lot of the times.
Well, he said it in the press conference yesterday morning, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me. I can go and find it just to make sure. But he was talking about, you know, just running the football and getting up and in the game and things like that. And like I said, I was there. I mean, he kind of, you know, he kind of chuckled and was making not a joke about it, but just honestly, just admitting, Terry, that he when they got up and Kentucky started, you know, packing the box because Auburn was running the ball so well, he said, deep down, my gut was telling me to throw the ball. I wanted to throw the ball. I wanted to get it out. And he said, but I told him on the headset, don't call pass plays, only call run plays because it's working. And obviously it was, and that's what Auburn went to.
Right. Now, I'm a little surprised. It's big of him to admit that because – a coach is real easy to fall in love with what they want and what they should do.
Well, and Hugh Freeze did that the first year and a half he's been here. I mean, I think that's what a lot of the frustrations were coming from Auburn fans, was it just seemed like it was the same script, right? The same plan over and over and over again. But this did seem like, Terry, this seemed like one of the very first times that we have seen him say, this is what I wanted to do, but for the betterment of the team, we didn't do that. We went with this, the thing that was working, and it worked out.
But do you think that's eventually what happens when he gets his players there?
What do you mean?
They become more of a passing team.
I mean, they could be, but if Auburn gets a better quarterback and better O-line play, I think they could be a passing team.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. That needs to happen. Because you're right, though, offensive line has been playing bad this year, but they're really good at run blocking. I've never seen a team so bad at one thing and good at another.
It's a crazy concept. It really is, and that's why you see so many different guys sub in on third and long, because those feel like those are the two or three guys that can hold Thorne's blind side for long enough. What was your thoughts on Thorne's performance? I know that you're not necessarily too big on him. He had the interception early where Free said that it was because Malcolm Simmons ran the wrong route. But ever since that first quarter, he looked really, really solid leading that offense.
Yeah, well, my take on that is, Christian, is this is let him throw 8-10 passes a game and be done with it.
Yeah.
Because that's what he can do. He's not a game player. He's not a game maker. He's just a game manager.
And right now, I mean, with the A-plus performance on Saturday, and I think you would give the Auburn running back room an A-tier overall, sometimes that might be all you need.
I just think that's the thing you got to do with Thorne is don't let him, whatever, don't lose the game for Auburn. That's what he's got to do. He initially got to win the game, but he can't lose it.
Yeah, I mean, just be the game manager, right? Don't throw interceptions, but nobody's asking you to throw the 65-yard pass in the air to hit Cam Coleman in the back corner of the end zone.
Let him throw the ball 12 to 15 times a game. Let him carry the ball 6 to 8 times a game, and then hand it off to the running back.
Right, and all is at the 60 plays or so, more, and that's what works out, and that's what's going to win a ball game for you. And he's going to discover, Coach Freeze is going to discover, I've done this earlier, I might have won a couple of more games. Certainly Oklahoma and probably Arkansas.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, take care, guys.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. And here's the exact quote for anybody that wants it. I don't have it on audio, but I'll read it to you. The quote from Hugh Freeze, it was about trying to pass on early before establishing the run later in the game. Hugh Freeze says, quote, No one had really gashed them in the run game. I always go in thinking we have a good plan and we have to be balanced and run it, but I did want to start the game trying to throw the football. It didn't work out so well to start it like that. Pretty quickly after the first quarter, and he said the first quarter flew by, but I told the sideline, the sideline reporter that was doing the broadcast, that we have to right now establish the run if we're going to be in this game. Hugh Freeze goes on to say, quote, then we start finding out our guys are handling them up front pretty good when we're running it. That four-minute drive was maybe the best I've seen in my career. To eat the entire clock up, and there were a lot of people in the box too. I was so tempted to throw it. I was so tempted, but kept calling no throw, no throw, no throw. Just hand it off. That was a really nice drive, end quote.
A 7 minute and 7 second drive, 14 plays, 12 runs, 2 passes. Jarquez Hunter touched the ball 9 times, and you drove down the field and scored. I mean, that drive was quite literally a Jarquez Hunter run for no gain, a 12-yard run, a Peyton Thorne 9-yard run, Jarquez Hunter 6-yard run, Jarquez Hunter 9-yard run, Jarquez Hunter no gain, then 1 yard, Jeremiah Cobb 1 yard for a first down, incomplete pass, pass complete to Jarquez Hunter. So he actually touched the ball 10 times on that 14-play drive, a 6-yard run, and then a 1 yard run for a touchdown. Just absolutely dominating that drive where, I mean, Kentucky, after a tie game, was down by a touchdown without getting the football left, and you were halfway done with the third quarter.
He says that 4 minute drive was maybe the best I've seen in my career. 334-321-1390. Spectre, you're on the line. How are you?
Hey, refresh my memory.
Okay.
You know, Coach said that he was saying, run the ball, in his mind, so on, okay? Don't pass, don't pass, don't pass. All right. In the first part of the year, didn't he refuse to run the ball because Jarquez and I think it was Austin that was fumbling the ball, and he was just looking for a reason not to run it?
I mean, there were definitely concerns, and he voiced those concerns with them not being able to keep the football in their hands, and that was just, I think that was compiled with the fact that Auburn was throwing 3 or 4 interceptions a game, too. But, yeah, he had concerns with them holding on to the football.
Because I can remember, even in games like California, I think it was, even A&M game, not Alabama A&M, I think Jarquez only had like less than 60 yards rushing.
Yeah, and they weren't running the ball a whole lot.
Yeah, and listen, before Jarquez had that good night the other night, who was the leading rusher at Auburn?
For the year? I think it was still him.
It was still him?
As far as I know, I'm pretty sure, yeah. Because, I mean, he still gets a majority of the snaps. I mean, Damari gets in there some, Cobb gets some carries, and Peyton Thorne actually has a decent amount of rushing yards, but it was still Jarquez Hunter.
Okay. I thought maybe it might have been Peyton, but you're saying it's still Jarquez. That's good. But anyway, you know, we had problems with the line in those early games, and, of course, the line gets better as every game is played. And maybe this is their peak. Maybe this offensive line now knows how to run block, and so on and so forth. But I will add one other thing that hasn't been seen before. H-back. The tight ends were playing an H-back. And I seen them lead blocks and stuff like that, and that helped Jarquez a whole lot.
Yeah.
So that's something we haven't seen before, and that needs to be kept up.
I'm with you on that.
Last time we had a decent H-back was Chandler Cox.
Yeah.
And boy, I tell you what, you never could find a better blocker than him.
And that's so underrated in today's game of college football. I'm with you.
All right, buddy. That's all I got for today.
I appreciate the call, Spectre. 334-321-1390. To that point, I mean, you typically see a Brandon Frazier or Luke Deal kind of in that position, right, Christian? They'll be on the end of the formation, and they'll pull out wide whichever way they're going and be an extra blocker, right, on run protection and run blocking and creating holes or just picking up the late defender on the backside, right? Even if the running back breaks through that first hole, there's usually that late closing defender, whether it's the safety coming up or the corner that's pulled off trying to make that tackle, or the linebacker that's dropped into his own coverage. Like, that's so important too, is, man, get ahead on a head. Put a body on a body somehow, some way, and create those lanes. And look, we've seen that Jarquez Hunter is good enough. He doesn't even need to have a wide open space to get a good run. But, man, when you're creating the holes like you did on Saturday, the man's borderline unstoppable. And you look at the current rushing stats right now, Spectre, just to give you an idea, and for everybody listening, Hunter on the year has 863 total yards. The next leading rusher on the team is Damari Alston with 228. So there's a 635-yard difference right there. Jarquez Hunter didn't get that on Saturday, so he was still the leading rusher.
400.
Yeah, he was still 400 clear, or whatever that is. So he was still the leading rusher, but you can see, yes, a 273-yard, 271, whatever it ended up being. That helps for sure, but Jarquez Hunter is by far the leading rusher on this football team.
I would also like to point something out, and this can go with a grain of salt, or you can look at it a little bit more seriously, but following the Oklahoma game, what would you guess Peyton Thorne's passing stat lines look like?
After the, like, from the Oklahoma game or on the season?
After the Oklahoma game.
Like, for that game in particular?
No, no. Just for the three games after the Oklahoma game.
Heard. Oh, gosh. I mean, you do have the Alabama A&M outlier in there. I mean, you've got the 73 points.
Just the three games after.
Oh, okay. My bad. My bad.
Turning the page following the bad Oklahoma loss.
Gotcha. Okay, so Georgia, Missouri, Kentucky. Okay, apologies. I don't think it's bad. It's my guess is, I'm trying to think, what, maybe three interceptions. He's probably completing 55% of his passes, and he's probably throwing for, I don't know, 170 a game.
Peyton Thorne, following the Oklahoma game, is 53 for 82, a 64% completion percentage. He's thrown for 548 yards, has two touchdowns, and then the one interception with Kentucky.
Well, there you go. Even better.
And that, I mean, and that's not including running the football, but just going off of the fact of when you establish the run and you begin to make things a little bit easier, the improvement has been there. And it shows to where if you're making it to where it's not the RPO every single time with a one receiver route that has to perfectly run a 3.5-yard slant in between the middle line, or in between the middle linebacker and the safety. And you're actually throwing guys in formations where there's three or four receivers. You have multiple different guys you can go to. The improvement is there. And you could say the success has been there throwing the ball as well when it's needed. Obviously, it's not something you want to rely on. But even just the Kentucky game where he was 20 of 26, threw for 172 yards. I mean, that's a 76.9 completion percentage. That is all that you can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, and take out the first quarter. I know you can't do that, but take out the first quarter where all of his incompletions came from and the interception came from. Like, he had a near, in terms of what, a QBR? He had a near perfect game outside the first quarter.
Even with that, that was his...
What was his QBR for that game? Do you have that?
I do. It was 76.3. Let me see where that ranks on his season.
Yeah, I'm wondering what he averages on the season.
He averages 61.5. That is his highest this year other than Alabama A&M.
So, which is an extremely high outlier.
It is.
Take that game out. That was his best QBR game by 14 points. And Auburn wins a football game. I mean, just let that sink in for a second. Let that sink in. Peyton Thorne doesn't have to be a world beater. Nobody's ever asked him. Nobody has ever asked Peyton Thorne to be a Heisman-winning quarterback. Nobody. Nobody's asked him to pass for 10,000 yards. Nobody's asked him for a 30-2 season touchdown-to-interception ratio. Nobody's asked him for that. You said it earlier. We called it all summer. B-plus, or just B quarterback play. Gets Auburn where they want to go this season. And they're starting to get that. Interceptions happen. They do. They happen. you've got to find a way to shake those off. And Peyton Thorne did. Now, it helps where they didn't ask him to do a whole lot after that, but maybe that's the recipe. Maybe that's what it takes. And if Auburn could take the pressure off of whoever's playing quarterback, I'll pose a fun question to get people fired up as we go to break. If Auburn is able to continue this style of play, this game plan of run, run, run the ball, how good can Hank Brown be operating this offense? 334-321-1390. We'll take our final break in hour number one. Come back, wrap it up, get into hour number two. You can give us a call or shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Back after this on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. And the stats you started flying out, Christian, they got people thinking a little bit on a Tuesday afternoon. The Peyton Thorne stats had multiple people say, man, that's a eye-opening stat. That's the stat of the day, stat of the year. I mean, when you really boil it down, I mean, has Peyton Thorne really been that bad? Or has the play calling and the game plan and the system just not put him in a spot to succeed? And not just him, the entire Auburn football offense.
I think in the earlier half of the season, I think it's a little bit of both, I think you would go with. And I think ever since then, they've slowly begun to figure things out and work out, iron out some of the wrinkles. It was unfortunate that it took losses in the win-loss column to be able to figure that out. But, I mean, again, you talked about the 65% completion percentage, 2-to-1 touchdown ratio over the past couple games. I mean, even throw in the Oklahoma game where he was 21 of 32 for 338 yards. He's one throw away in that game from having a perfect game and Auburn winning and not having this record, which, again, is it's unfortunate to say that it happened
to go
down this
way. Well, that's the thing is, in that Oklahoma game, people are forgetting the fact that up until that play where he never should have been put in a position to throw the football anyway. Yes, he should have seen the guy, but he was never supposed to be throwing the ball in that spot anyway. He did have a nearly perfect game. I mean, he was playing really, really well. We had started to talk about in the building, we've changed.
It's changing.
It's turning, and it's going in the right direction. And then the world was like, just kidding. Nope. And then it took three more games to figure it out.
And it's really unfortunate because the one way that it happened was just because that had been what is hurting you the entire year up to that point. Again, it was the interception where, again, you mentioned interceptions are going to happen. Just unfortunate. In that case, you happen to throw another one and it's the game-deciding touchdown. But again, I mean, 21 of 32, 338 yards, three touchdowns, and then the one interception at the very end of the game. And ever since then, I mean, two touchdowns. He had the one interception against Kentucky where, again, Coach Freeze said that Malcolm Simmons ran the wrong route to begin with, and then Thorne tried to do a little bit too much because of it. But all we've asked for all year long is B or B+. And I think 65% completion percentage and 538 yards in three games, you could say it's right at that mark, if not even a little bit above.
To back up my statement about interceptions happen, I want you to listen to these top 10 quarterbacks in the country according to passing yards. Are you ready for this? Actually, we can do this. Let's see if this will let me do this. Oh, it will. Beautiful. Top 10 quarterbacks in the country in terms of completion percentage. Are you ready for this? You will never guess in your life. You will not guess without looking it up. I'll give you like 5 seconds. Who is the nation's leader in completion percentage in college football? I promise you, nobody will get this unless you just happen to look at the stat this morning.
Power four school?
Power four school.
Okay, I was going to go with like Navy or somebody.
Power four school.
Okay.
He is the nation's leader in completion percentage in college football.
One more hint, give me a conference.
SEC.
Really?
Yes. Now, this is somewhat of a not fair question, but according to the stat, Graham Mertz. Now, you start comparing this to the guys that are below him. He's thrown about 100 passes less than those guys. He's only got 72, or he only has 94 attempts. So he's thrown, yeah, at least 100 less. But you start looking down this list, okay? Dylan Gabriel is there. Curtis Rourke is there. Will Howard, Shadir Sanders, Will Rogers, Drew Aller, which that's big news. Haynes King, Jackson Dart, okay? Here's how many interceptions those guys have thrown. Gabriel, 5. Rourke, 3. Howard, 4. Sanders, 6. Rogers and Aller both have thrown 4. Jackson Dart's thrown 3, right? You're talking about quarterbacks that are some of the best in the country when it comes to completion percentage, but they still throw interceptions. You just have to find a way to bounce back and not put them in a spot to do it again.
And you take away the Cal game, which, again, I know is a big-time quote-unquote takeaway, but when you have 4 of those in one game, there's been 3 in the other games combined.
There you go. Stats galore on this Tuesday afternoon. Lots more to get to, though. Auburn football, Auburn basketball, college football. All sorts of things. We'll get to it coming up in hour number 2. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number 2 during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number 1, be sure to go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also find our SEC Football Challenge on there as well. Be sure you get your picks in for that each and every Friday before midnight. You can do it anytime during the week, but they're due Friday at midnight. So be sure that you are getting those picks in. Shout out to those wonderful sponsors, Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza, also University Ace Hardware next to the movie theater in Auburn, and the Orthopedic Clinic. Those three sponsors provide, one of them provides a weekly prize every single week to the best picker for that week, and then they all come together for a big grand prize at the end of the season for the best picker. So if you have been in on that contest all season long, then you're still in the running for that. But if you want to get in on it now, you can still win a weekly prize. So be sure you do that at ESPNAU.com. And hour number 1, talked a lot of college football, Auburn football, and guess what? If you missed it, we'll talk more about it here in hour number 2. Speaking of hour number 2, before we get into content, want to remind you that the second hour of my show each and every day here on ESPN is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour from 3 to 4 each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN. Phone lines are open in hour number 2. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And we have a text from the On the Line text box, Christian, and it says something that a lot of people, I think, have been wondering. Where has Perry Thompson been? When was his last catch? Have I just missed him? Have I not seen him on the field? No, he just hasn't really been out there a whole lot. And to pull up some stats for Mr. Perry Thompson, somebody that I think we were very excited about, but had to limit the expectations because just how young he was. And bringing in a guy like KLS, I think, probably hurt his playing time a little bit this year. The stats are not going to blow you away. They're not going to be impressive. You're not going to like them if you haven't looked at this. Perry Thompson on the season has 4 catches for 123 yards and 1 touchdown, but even that stat is misleading because one of those catches out of the 123 yards was a 70-yard bomb. So outside of that, right, outside of that one 70-yard catch, you take that away, he has 3 catches for 53 yards.
Most importantly to look at, though, he had 2 receptions against Alabama A&M. He had 1 catch against New Mexico, had 1 catch against Arkansas, and then had a couple snaps against Georgia as well where he didn't catch a pass. That's only 4 games. So I would not be surprised if you don't see him the rest of the year and he gets redshirted. That way a year doesn't get wasted for him.
I haven't thought about that with Perry.
It's not a bad way to go about it, and I would not be surprised if that's the way that Coach Freeze and them are going about everything too, because
that's fascinating.
Again, he had 1 catch against Arkansas. I believe he had 3 or 4 snaps against Georgia where, again, since he went into that game, it counts, but doesn't have a game or a stat or hasn't taken a snap on the field since.
And remember, he dealt with some early injury stuff too.
And he was a late arrival.
He was.
And so I think with all of those things kind of coming into fruition – give him a little bit more time. And again, don't waste a year where, again, you played your 2 games and, again, you looked good, but he's not necessarily been the piece right now where you are, we have to have him for this offense to be successful. Again, I think bringing in Keandre Lambert-Smith has been a really, really big help for that, but somebody like him where all of a sudden, imagine him coming in. He's a redshirt freshman now next year. Now all of a sudden gets a crack at the starting job and can really go off from there.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of people that have, you know, rumors and things like that on if this redshirt conversation has come around. And I'll be honest, I mean, you know me. If you listen to this show long enough, my listeners know me. I don't buy into that stuff.
I don't either.
It's worthless in my opinion. So this is honestly the first time I have kind of just, that I hate to say this, kind of forgot about him because he hasn't been a part of the offense. And you're right, Christian. He hasn't been a necessity. He hasn't been needed. He is not the missing piece on this offense to where if he starts getting action, everything's going to change like that.
And that's not a shot at him. That's
no,
just the way that this
all.
Offense has worked this year.
But to the redshirting conversation, you think about what we've been talking about the first day and a half after the Kentucky game is Auburn is hopefully about to turn into a run-heavy offense. That doesn't do Perry Thompson a whole lot of good, especially when you have guys like KLS and Simmons and Coleman and even Fairweather at the tight end spot and Robert Lewis, apparently, where you now just don't really need Perry. He's great, and you'd love to have him and utilize him, but if he could be better next year, then that's the option. Now, I hate to play devil's advocate, but I will. If he does redshirt or you just simply don't play him, you're banking on him agreeing to redshirt and not saying, to heck with this, I'm going somewhere else.
You're hoping the peace sign doesn't go up, but the way that, again, that was the way that my first thought about it was, especially because when you were talking about it, I went to go scroll and see how many games he's been active in, and again, there are only 4 of them, and it has not been since the University of Georgia game. If I'm Hugh Freeze and you're Perry Thompson, and I'm sitting there going, hey, you could get 15 more snaps this year, maybe catch 2 more passes, or continue to develop. We're not going to use a year of your eligibility to where next year you're still coming in as a freshman. I think that would be the choice that you would take.
I would hope so. I would, but not everybody thinks that way.
No.
And look, there's a lot of people that are probably listening to the show right now that would say, look, man, you only have a limited amount of time in college. You got to go. You got to find somewhere that's going to use you right away and have confidence that you're going to be used. And for a guy like Perry, I think he probably feels he's good enough to be that dude somewhere. Not at a big-time program yet, but, I mean, you could go to a South Alabama or something like that and just dominate down there. But I think we can all see with a guy like him, man, you give him some time to get seasoned and to grow and mature just a little bit. Man, he could be really, really good at Auburn or wherever that he decides to play college football. And so if you're Perry Thompson, though, I also think you've got to play into the factor of look at what Cam Coleman's done in the last couple of games compared to what he did in the first few, where he has been a little bit more active. And they've at least tried to find Cam Coleman on the field as much as possible. They're still struggling to get the football in his hands. And let's be honest, he's had a couple of times where he struggled to catch the football. But it does seem that Auburn has remembered, hey, we do have Cam Coleman. And I asked Hugh Freeze about that 2 weeks ago when he scored the touchdown against Missouri. It's like, man, does that help his confidence at all? And he said, yeah, absolutely. But you bring up an interesting point with Perry, and so do our texters and callers, and believe we have one right now, 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. And, John, you're on the line.
Hey, guys. I have a little different take on the Perry Thompson.
Okay.
Thing. I think this could also be used in by Hugh Freeze in recruiting.
How so?
Where when a guy comes in, look, everybody's not going to make the NFL, and Freeze can say, look, if your freshman year doesn't work out for you at Auburn, we'll redshirt you, and you can transfer. We'll find you a place where you can find playing time and be successful, and we won't burn one of your years.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's intriguing. I agree with you on the side of Auburn and any organization. They're not even programs now; they're organizations. Any college organization, I'm calling that. I'm putting my flag on that right now. By the way, we're gonna start calling them organizations on this show. But I think that organization can at least respect the wishes of a player like a Perry Thompson in that situation. It's like, all right, hey man, let's use your red shirt. If it's not going to happen here, that's fine. I promise you that team's not going to do their – they're not going to go out and go find you a new home. That's on you, man. If you want to transfer, that's on you. But I get what you're saying, John, and you hope that a program or an organization can at least try to honor that the best they can. But, man, how many bad situations have we seen where red shirts get burned late in seasons or guys who have refused to step on the field because they didn't want to burn their red shirt and the bridge just gets burned right there?
Well, I think good organizations, if I can use that term,
love it.
I think they do their due diligence in trying to get student athletes to a good spot. So look at basketball, where Katie Johnson lands it. Wasn't it George Mason?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if that's a spot where KD's like specifically looking at. Oh, hey, they made a Final Four 20 years ago under Larrañaga. You know, I think the quality organizations do that due diligence.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, I would like to think, and I'm not in that world on that side of it, so I don't know, but I would like to think for Katie Johnson's a great example, a guy that played at Auburn after transferring in, put in some really good years, and just realized that his time had passed here on the Plains, where, yeah, I'm sure a coach like Bruce Pearl or one of those assistants probably made a couple of calls and said, hey, do you have any spots? Do you have something for this guy? Or if a program is to call a school like Auburn about Katie Johnson, you obviously are going to hopefully, you know, have good things to say. And so it doesn't always happen that way, and I think we'd be naive to believe that, John, but hopefully that's the case more times than not.
Agreed. Thank you much, guys.
Thanks so much, John. Great to hear from you, man. 334-321-1390. And this is a touchy subject, Christian, because this gets back to the core of this entire transfer portal NIL thing of, look, it's a eat or be eaten world. That's just how it is. And I'm not just talking sports. I'm talking just in the world we live in, right? It's eat or be eaten nowadays. And sure, the good side of me, the good person that I feel that I am, wants to believe, okay, didn't work out for not saying anything is happening here, but Perry Thompson, to get back to him, if it just comes to the point of, man, I don't want to be here. It's not working out. I want to go somewhere else. You would hope that, A, he would have the respect and the honorability to say, hey, coach, Freeze, people in the building, it's not working, right? I gotta go. And you would hope that that would be reciprocated by saying, look, man, we understand. Been a good time. We'll help you out, and we'll get you to a new home. But let's be real. It doesn't always happen that way.
No, and it doesn't. And that's what we've seen throughout this year where guys are stepping away from their football team and on their own taking their transfer or taking their redshirt year and literally quitting on the football team and saying that I am already entering the transfer portal or am planning on entering it. And so I think that speaks
all of that.
Right. And I think that speaks to Perry. And if we're talking about this situation to where you would think that since that has not happened.
Man, I just slammed my hand on the table, man. I'm so fired up about the transfer portal.
But, again, you've seen so many guys that have walked away from their team because of NIL or not playing enough and not getting their role that they were quote-unquote promised. You haven't seen that with anybody at Auburn. And, again, not saying that anything has happened with Perry Thompson, but, I mean, Hugh Freeze isn't going to want to lose him,
no.
I wouldn't say. I mean, 6'3", 222 coming in as a freshman, I guarantee he has plans for him in the future. It's just more so trying to make sure that everything works, and you're hoping that there is the maturity side of things that you don't necessarily always see from freshmen of, hey, I understand that this year was not the best year for me, but guys like DK Metcalf redshirted their first year at Ole Miss, and is he selling cars now?
Is he okay? Is he doing all right?
I think so. I haven't heard his name in a couple of years.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I flash back to what Hugh Freeze told me in a very select group of media in Dallas at SEC Media Days in a private event. That same thing
Big
was
flex.
Brought up. He said, he said that exact thing. He talked about DK and AJ Brown. He said, these guys weren't ready when they showed up. He said it took them some time, and that was 10 or 15 years ago. Wow. That's brutal. He said they weren't ready then, and it took them a little bit of time to get ready. Now, he did admit that Cam Coleman, he felt, was close and closer than anybody else that was stepping in the room.
And with the offense and with that receiver unit, he was probably the one guy that you did need to have on the other on one side of the ball.
Exactly. And so I hope in Perry Thompson's camp, right, I hope that that realization is there of I can get better at Auburn. And to the credit of Hugh Freeze and this staff, and I know we got to get to break, to the credit of Hugh Freeze and this staff, with a lot of the players, at least the young kids that I've heard from on the team and the recruits that are coming in, Tebow mentioned this yesterday, they haven't given up.
No.
They have not moved on. Auburn has not lost a ton in terms of early portal entries, like you mentioned, and recruits that have said, oh, nah, I'm good. I think I'm going to go somewhere else. That's not what what they're putting on the field is not what they've sold me. I'm going to dip out and go somewhere else. You haven't seen a whole lot of that, and I think, again, that goes back to what they're selling and the belief in what Hugh Freeze can do.
And I think that that was the biggest fear when this losing streak started, was that all of a sudden you're going to see
here we go
Hayes Fawcett and that blah, blah, blah has decommitted from Auburn or whatever, and you'd see five or six of them in a week, and all of a sudden Auburn would jump from the fifth recruiting class to the 27th off of five or six recruitments that have been lost. But if anything, you're still gaining them. You're still finding ways to win everybody over. I mean, you're hearing so many guys that, especially underclassmen, you heard Keldrick Faulk talk about it, walking off the field just to stick with us. Everything's going to get worked out. Continuing to stick with us. Was it the goal line stand in the fourth quarter where Coach Freeze said that there were seven freshmen playing?
He said up on that drive, he said there were, I think, up to six.
Okay, but again, that's six over
freshmen.
Half of your defense. And Kane Lee, the guy with the interception, is a true freshman that undercut the football.
He's so good.
And you're seeing the underclassmen, and it's the understanding. And you have to give so much credit to Coach Freeze and the staff, but also those guys where, I mean, these are the top guys in high school. They don't know how to lose. And all of a sudden, you've come to Auburn and you've got that sour taste in your mouth where, again, it's something you haven't really ever dealt with before. But to be able to have the maturity and the understanding of, hey, this is going to get worked out, and you're seeing it now with the upcoming class where Alvin Henderson's probably the most vocal guy about it with, hey, we're going to get everything figured out here. So much credit has to go with the coaching staff and the maturity of everybody to be able to handle this whole situation.
And shout out to Alvin Henderson, too, who became, what was it, the leading scorer in the AHSAA football history or something like that. I mean, which we knew that was going to happen. They give the football to him 60 times a game, and he scores 8 touchdowns every time
he
steps on
healthy
the field.
Is...
That's a miracle, too. here's a quick look before we get to break. Auburn's 2025 recruiting class right now, according to 247 Sports, still top five. right? They're still top five in the country behind Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, LSU, Auburn at five, 27 commits still in that 2025 class, according to 247. That's in 2025. Here's what 2026 looks like. Auburn is still inside the top 10. They sit at number six in that class with five total commits, four stars, and a three-star. And Auburn's got a lot of work to do there. But and I say that in terms of they are on the right track. They have a lot of guys that they are banking on for that 2026 class. So if they're not giving up on Auburn, maybe we shouldn't either. 334-321-1390. We'll take another break, come back, maybe talk a little World Series as that could end tonight in New York. We'll have that for you, plus more college football talk on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and won't talk about this a whole lot because there may not be much more to talk about after tonight with the World Series, the Fall Classic that's been happening, and of course you can catch all of that right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll have Game 4 tonight on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader coming up after the drive. Game 4 from the Bronx, where the Dodgers are up 3-0 on the Yankees. Christian, this was supposed to be the possibly the best World Series ever. I mean, possibly one of the best series we've ever seen in Major League Baseball. And after Game 1, the fireworks we had there, Games 2 and 3, you'll appreciate this. The Dodgers just flat-out beat the Yankees.
They did. And it's been the fireworks and it's been the World Series that one player has hoped for, and his name is Freddie Freeman. Because that man
and
might
Braves
be...
Braves fans said, boo.
Yeah, everybody took a big sigh of sadness and depression, realizing still continue to such a weird situation how everything ended there. But oh my goodness, what a series he's having! And
good for him. Can I just say that? Good for him. For Freddie.
Sure, I guess.
Look, everybody knows I'm a Red Sox guy first, Braves fan second. Like that's a common thing that I make very public. Good for Freddie Freeman. I know it didn't go down the way Braves fans wanted it to, and that's probably an unpopular take for people that cheer for the Bravos, but Freddie's a good dude, man.
It's for somebody that plays the game the right way.
The right way. It's just he's a very good face for the game. I mean, he's got it all, right? And you're happy for a guy that really struggled throughout this postseason, dealt with the injury the entire time, and he's been the man in the World Series so far, and he's given the Dodgers a 3-0 lead.
6-3, 4-2, 4-2, all in favor of the Dodgers. Dodgers are going with a bullpen game tonight, which on last Friday, when we were talking about our winning picks and everything, I picked the Dodgers because of their bullpen. And so you're going to get to be able to see about nine innings, seven, eight, possibly even nine arms for Los Angeles go tonight. And again, you were talking about, I mean, there's no way the MLB lets this be a sweep, right? There's no way with this being the best World Series.
There's no way the Major League is going to let this thing be a sweep. No way they're going to let the Dodgers sweep the Yankees tonight.
Just no way that they let Aaron Judge continue to not be able to hit the baseball.
Man, Yankees fans have straight up turned on him. They have turned on him so fast. I saw, it may have been Barstool, so it may have been a joke, but they were talking about has he lost his pinstripes. I mean, but in seriousness, they have turned on him very, very quickly here. And man, last night, I watched a lot of the pregame coverage last night, and it just seemed like they built this thing up like the Yankees had to win last night. I mean, they had the scene, they had a rapper, I think, for whatever reason. That was bad. That was bad. That was so bad. But you bring back Derek Jeter, who, yes, he was on the Fox pregame coverage, but you bring him out of the booth, and he is the ceremonial first pitch. And they just built it up like, all right, the Yankees are going to get this one. They're going to get back in the series, and everything's going to be okay. And the Dodgers said, that's cute and all, but we're here to win, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, Freddie Freeman, about 15 minutes later, said, I'll hit a two-run shot into the right field stands, into the short porch. But, man, what a series it's been for Los Angeles. I do have a complaint, though, and it's something that we talked about.
Uh-oh.
And it's the fact that...
Bunt the ball, Paul.
We saw small ball last night. It didn't pan out.
It didn't work, but it was
fantastic
nice
for a true baseball player to see where you expect so much power out of these two lineups to be able to say, hey, let's go try and steal a run. It didn't work. Dodgers still ended up winning.
What's your complaint, my friend?
My complaint is that it goes, the way that the series is formatted and the way that it's home and home for it's 2-3-2.
I hate it.
It is two home games for the number one seed. So there were two games in L.A. There are three games in the Bronx, and then it would go back to L.A. for games 6 and 7 if needed. I don't like it.
I don't either.
It needs to go 2-2-1-1-1.
You remember back in the day, I say out back in our day, which was not that long ago, that's how the NBA Finals used to be. The Finals used to be 2-3-2, and I just don't like that.
Sorry not to cut you off, but imagine if you're the Yankees, you win one of the games in L.A., you win all three games on the road, and although the Dodgers were a one seed, you lost in five games and only played two games in your home stadium.
Right.
Granted, it gives you the gives you the better sign of things if you're able to lose a couple games. That feels really weird to say, but because games 6 and 7 would then be back at home for you rather than having 5 and 7 at home. I don't know.
I think it makes it so much easier for the bottom seed to shift the series and to get home field advantage. I mean, winning a singular game, it's like, man, you have a heavy home favorite now rather than in the 2-2-1-1-1. Yeah, you steal one on the road, you've evened the series.
Right.
Rather than you have a heavy home field advantage. I agree. I know why they do it for travel purposes, but what are we worried about? Money?
I don't think that's too big of an issue. But look at, even real fast, even if all home games were 1 through 5 games, the road team would just have to steal one of the next two.
And you're the bottom seed, so that's what you're supposed to do. That you have to. It's going to be a little bit harder for you. Should be. If so, why do we have seedings?
Just makes it easier for the lower seed to get on a roll.
I agree. 100% agree. Dodgers-Yankees, you can catch game 4 right here on ESPN 106.7 after the drive. We've got 30 more minutes during On the Line.
Are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Christian Griffin across from me. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Phone lines are still open. We've had good engagement today between the phone lines and the text box. Phone line number is 334-321-1390. You can call and be a part of the show that way, or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. And before we move on, want to remind folks that starting on Thursday, the Auburn women's basketball season begins. And in case you missed it, ESPN 106.7 is now the new home of Auburn women's basketball. And so we will start the season right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader with the exhibition game coming up this Thursday as the Tigers get started. They are hosting LaGrange College. So during the week, right, Auburn women's basketball, they play some games during the week, but most of them are either on Thursdays or Sundays. I believe their season opener is actually next Monday. But during the week, the drive is going to be cut just a few minutes short. We'll pick up and start the pregame coverage and have the full broadcast with Britt Bowen right here on ESPN 106.7. So looking forward to having that. We will start that on Thursday. So that'll start. Drive will be cut short about 15 minutes. We will start at 5:45 right here on ESPN, and tip-off time is set for 6 o'clock. So that is starting this Thursday, Auburn and LaGrange for the exhibition, and then the season opener on Monday, November 4th. That's coming up this following Monday against Southern Illinois. So excited for another really good season of Auburn women's basketball, coming off of one of their better seasons in quite some time, making the NCAA tournament. They were a part of the first four, and so they're going to try and try to, get into the real tournament, but get into the tournament and not have to play the extra game where they fell short and were unable to move on. And so we're going to have all those for you right here on ESPN 106.7. And speaking of the weekend and speaking of basketball, did you get a chance to get caught up and see what happened with Auburn men's basketball against Furman in the exhibition they had, Christian?
Yeah, I saw that it was close, like most Auburn games, to about the first 15 minutes. Auburn went on a run before halftime, and then in the second half, kind of overpowered, over-physicaled Furman and walked away with a pretty solid victory.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, this team, as crazy as it sounds to start talking college basketball, they start next week. Like, the season opener is next week for Auburn University men and women's basketball. High school basketball, for me anyway, at Auburn High, I was telling somebody earlier, I was actually talking to Britt Bowen earlier, I said, man, it's crazy. I'm going to call an Auburn High basketball game before I call the next Auburn High football game because we're off this week for football. And so my first Auburn High basketball game is next Thursday on the 7th, which is so crazy to think about. So crossover season is here. And for the Auburn University men, I have to go back to the fact that this team is so deep. And somebody said to me the other day, and I can't remember who it was, they said, is there a chance, and I want to open this question up to you, Christian, and to our listeners, is there a chance that there are too many dudes on this team? Like, are we going to run into the problem where it's like, man, we don't know how to split up the minutes with all these guys?
I was going
to
say the same thing, almost like an NBA guy where you have too many playmakers.
Yeah.
And granted, that would be, in college basketball, it still seems like a good problem to have. The biggest question mark and the biggest hope that you have for that team is that everybody understands their role and is able to play that role and the team can gel rather than somebody that's getting 15 or 16 minutes a game thinking they should be getting 24 or 25 and you start having the behind the scenes frustrations and arguments to where the team can't all be going in that same direction trying to get that ultimate goal.
Yeah, and you know, I was actually applying for Auburn basketball credentials early this week for the home games, and what's unfortunate is, man, the home games and the non-conference schedule, they're just, I'll admit, they're just not good. There's not very many good home games for Auburn in the non-con, and somebody was asking me, man, why did they do that? Why did they not make any big-time home games for the fans? And I had to remind them, I said, well, as important as it is for fans to see good home games, Bruce Pearl's trying to build a resume here. And unfortunately, this is the way of the road nowadays in college basketball. You beat a good team on your home floor and you get little to no credit for it. Whereas you beat a team neutral site or you go on the road and beat them, you get so much more credit and love and favorability for that. So that's what Auburn's doing. They said, we'll go to Cameron Indoor. We'll go to Houston. We'll go wherever you want us to go. We're just not going to play it inside of Neville Arena.
And going off of what you're talking about with getting credit for wins, I think Auburn has, and this kind of goes with every single sport, it's been the mentality of, okay, well, it's at home. We have a good chance. Because of the way that Jordan Hare and the way that Neville Arena play a factor. But
right.
Auburn goes on the road, even if it's a much less superior team, you lose so much more confidence just because you see Auburn and the at symbol, right? And so Auburn, with as much talent as they have on the basketball team, they're trying to get rid of that to where you feel just as comfortable to be able to impose your will on a team, even when you're on the road and you're having to form your own energy rather than being able to completely feed off the fans.
Well, it wouldn't be that way if you didn't have situations like we saw a year ago where you go to App State on a Sunday morning and you lose, right? To an App State team that wasn't all that good. You just let them hang around and you let them beat you on a Sunday, early Sunday morning, early Sunday afternoon. I mean, it's those situations where, right, we've seen Auburn go to Gainesville and lose for how many times, or struggle to play in Lexington for so many times, in Athens, which I saw a win there last year. It's a miracle. If Chad Baker Mazzara doesn't go off, I don't know if Auburn wins. I mean, it's those types of things where, yeah, you want them to be good on the road or neutral site. We know they're going to be good at home. And to go back on that point, I pull up the schedule for Auburn men's basketball. Just think about all these games that Auburn is going to play, right, in the non-con, which they have hyped it up enough. Everybody knows it's one of the hardest schedules in the country and probably the hardest in Auburn basketball history. But the combination of Houston, Iowa State, Duke, Ohio State, and Purdue, those five teams, none of them will walk inside of Neville Arena. And I, for the fans, I do. I hate that. I really, really do hate the opportunity for the fans who pay a lot of money to step inside there and watch a lot of great games and are now paying even more for NIL. I hate that they don't get the opportunity to see a good game in that building, at least a noticeable opponent inside of Neville Arena until Tennessee on January 25th.
And how many of those games, I know obviously Houston and, you know, that's considered a home and home, but it's in Birmingham and then in downtown Houston.
Yeah.
So it's not quite a home and home. Is Duke, is that becoming a home and home where we go to Cameron Indoor and then next year Duke comes here? So there are big games in the future, in the horizon. But, yeah, the fact that all of them you feel like you go away from this year and you just hope that next year's schedule you get a bunch of those big games because – I mean, do we go to Purdue, so is Purdue coming here?
No, that's a neutral site. Those are going to be played in, I believe, Birmingham and Indianapolis. I could be wrong
that's
on that,
right.
But those
yeah.
are neutral site games. So it's not technically home and home, right? But it's the neutral site type of thing. So, I don't know. And I know that's how the schedule has shaped out to be this year.
You just wish you had at least one. A big-time game that you're really, really looking forward to, whether that be late December, early January, right before you hit SEC play, to size yourself up at home against a really, really high-caliber team.
I can't get past the fact that when you look at this Auburn basketball schedule, and I hate to say it, and this is no disrespect to the teams that are going to be playing here, but, man, the most noticeable game inside of Neville Arena doesn't happen until January 25th when Tennessee comes to town. Like, here's your games in at home. Vermont, Kent State, North Alabama, Richmond is fine. That's a Sunday morning at 11 a.m., by the way. Georgia State, Monmouth, Missouri, Mississippi State. Do any of those games get people excited? I don't think so.
At least not by just a name. And again, it's not like somebody that draws the crowd of Duke or of Iowa State or, you know, somebody of that caliber. I think it does go to show credit, though, that even the home games that you are playing, they are still against, I mean, at worst, mid-major Division I teams, and I think that goes to even more credit about talking about how difficult this schedule is. But, again, I agree with you. The one thing you're missing is that big-time home game inside Neville Arena before the SEC play hits In January.
And the good thing, though, when you look at this schedule, man, look at here's the rankings of the teams that Auburn's going to play. 4, 5, 7, 14. That's just that doesn't include the other opponents they could play in Maui.
That's what I was looking up right now to see what the bracket looks like because, I mean, that is just as difficult to where you talked about it, where this could be by no means an insult because you can't even truly use this word, but the quote-unquote lowest tier team you would play in Maui is Memphis.
Which is a great program. Not as good as it has been in the past, but I also misspoke earlier. I forgot. The Auburn-Duke game is the SEC-ACC challenge game, so that is not a home and home. That's just going to be a Auburn goes to Duke because that's
you just hope that gets rewarded next year of the same teams playing.
Or the same caliber. Bring North Carolina.
Right.
Bring North Carolina to Neville Arena. Are you kidding me? Or like a Syracuse. I'd be cool with a Syracuse in here.
Yeah.
Like that would be really, really cool. And so you understand that game. That's fine. Because I believe Alabama plays North Carolina this year in the SEC ACC Challenge. You just want to see some of those reciprocated. But tell me again the teams in the Maui. I've seen it 100 times. I just can't picture them in my head right now. Because I've looked at all the different Feast Week tournaments that are going on, and there's so many good ones. I love them. But Maui is one. Last time Auburn was there, they made some noise down in Maui. Remember, that was the Jared Harper team that beat Xavier and had a chance to beat Duke.
Beat Zion Williamson, yeah.
That was a really, really fun Maui Invitational.
It is. It's Auburn, Colorado, Dayton, Iowa State, Memphis, Michigan State, North Carolina, and they're back-to-back defending champions, the UConn Huskies.
Ooh, man.
And
wow,
where it sits right now, Auburn will play Iowa State. That is a 9 p.m. game on ESPNU.
That's a top 10 matchup.
And then,
hold on, so Iowa State is 5. Yeah, read me the names again. UConn is 3. I'm reading out of the preseason AP top 25.
Oh, okay.
UConn is 3. Iowa State is 5.
Is North Carolina ranked?
They're number 9.
Michigan State?
Michigan State is not ranked, but they've been struggling for quite some time.
Memphis?
No.
Dayton?
No. Dayton is not.
And then Colorado. So, I mean, 4 no. ranked teams and 4 non-ranked teams, but again, still
big brands.
When you think of the Dayton Flyers, you think of basketball. Or when you think of
go Dayton Flyers.
Or when you think of Michigan State, you think of Izzo. You think of Sparty, and you think of the runs that they would make. So again, going back to Monday the 25th, Auburn will play Iowa State. On Tuesday, November 26th, the following afternoon, the Game 3 loser will play the Game 4 loser. So if Auburn loses, they will play the loser of Dayton and North Carolina, which is not an easy matchup.
And if they win, they'll get the winner.
And if they win, they would... Why do I not see it on here?
Wouldn't they just get the winner of that game?
Yes, they yeah. So they get the winner of Dayton and North Carolina.
So if you beat a top 5 Iowa State team, you get to rewarded go play by another a top one. 10 North Carolina team. Or if you lose, yeah, you get a Dayton Flyers team that is going to be rebuilding a little bit. But hey, that Michigan State team received votes in the preseason top 25, so keep that in mind.
If Auburn beat Iowa State on 9 p.m. on ESPNU on Monday.
Don't make it the early game the next day.
No, it's not, but it is an 11 p.m. tip. It's Eastern time.
Whoa! On the next day?
The next day. So, I mean, at least you're still getting a full 24 hours. The loser, that would be the 8:30 game. But just a wild... I mean, you thought
that?
The Auburn-Cal football game was a late
bad.
Kick. Wait till a Maui Invitational tip-off at 10 p.m.
I just can't get over the fact that you have the third-ranked team, the fifth-ranked team, the ninth-ranked team. So... on top of what Auburn's already guaranteed to do, which is play five and seven and so many others in their non-conference schedule, they could also catch the third ranked team. Oh, 4. Sorry, I forgot about Houston.
Yeah, 4, 5, 7, and 14, and then that's all before you hit SEC play.
And then you could also catch 3, 9. Before you even touch the floor in SEC play, which is what the message, or I guess why the message has been for so long, Auburn basketball fans. If this team has 5, 6, 7 losses going into SEC play, do not scramble, do not fret, do not worry. That's okay. Now, there is a caveat to this. There is an asterisk here. If Auburn gets the doors blown off of them in these games, then you got a little room to be concerned.
And not one of them... you don't want to say it's understandable, but at least okay early on, because that's the classic.
You could make a reasonable explanation for it.
Right. It's the classic, gives us a lot to build off of and continue to learn off of. But yeah, if you're losing by 20, 25 points in 4 or 5 of these games, that's when you start getting a little bit worried. That's when you hope that everything can get figured out. But if Auburn even were to go 500, or again, as you mentioned, have 5 or 6 non-conference losses before hitting SEC play, I think you're going to be okay, because these are the teams that you're going to be seeing play college basketball games in late March and in early April.
And just for a quick reference on what's happening on the other side of the state in terms of Alabama's men's basketball schedule, they're right there with Auburn. I mean, they are right in stride for stride, step for step with what Auburn is going to be doing in this upcoming season. They are also playing in some sort of a tournament. They're playing in that in the Players Era Festival. Is that right? They're playing in the Players Era Festival. They also catch Illinois in the Newton Classic, whatever. So Illinois is not ranked, but they're going to be a good team. Here's the guaranteed ranked teams that Alabama plays this year in basketball. 14 Purdue, 4 Houston, 25 Rutgers, 9 North Carolina, and 15 Creighton. Right on par with what Auburn's doing. Now, how fascinating is this? The fact that both teams play Purdue, both teams play Houston, and there's a chance that both teams could play North Carolina. How about a measuring stick before these teams even meet on the floor? How awesome would that be? It's not apples to apples, but it's pretty close.
It is. And those two teams will play each other on February 15th, and then the final regular season game of the year inside Neville Arena on March 8th. I mean, that game
could be.
I talked about, or it could possibly be what sets up to be the biggest Auburn basketball game in Neville Arena, I think, could possibly be no question. But, I mean, you could go to say that it could be the biggest Auburn basketball regular season game ever.
Regular season, definitely. No doubt about it. The tickets for that game could feed kids. They could feed families. Let's get to our final break. We've blown way past it. We got to get to it.
I might need to feed all the kids that are going to be sitting outside for four days before the game.
Pearlville is going to be there for 2 weeks, bro. They're going to cancel classes. That's in March. Yeah, classes are still going on. They're going to have to cancel. Sorry.
Shut them down.
Shut them down. Shut down the town. Shut down the school. We got to get to break. We'll come back, wrap it all up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. We've had a lot of fun in the studio. It really did fly by, and got to cover quite a bit of ground, I think, today in terms of college football, Auburn football. Got into a little bit of the World Series, which you can catch game four of tonight on the national ESPN broadcast right here on ESPN 106.7. That'll start right after the drive is done, so be sure you stick around when they are going off the air. You can catch Joe Shambi, who Boog is so good. He is so good at baseball radio play-by-play. And nothing against the guys on Fox, but I'm just telling you, baseball play-by-play with those guys is just a little bit different on here on ESPN Radio. So
we've talked about how difficult it is to master it,
yeah.
But when you do, just sounds so much better.
It's so good. So, yep, you can catch that here on ESPN tonight. We'll have that for you. And then, so we talked about that a little bit and then got to talk good about Auburn basketball and kind of the schedule that we're looking at, a little bit of the roster as well. Got people texting in saying Yankees are going to win and survive tonight, Christian. Yankees are going to extend the series. Even with a bullpen game for the Dodgers, they're just so good. They're so deep, man. They got so many dudes that come in, and even if they only throw 20, 25 pitches, you feel like they can get and record three or five outs.
I think that's the biggest thing, is you want guys that can go four or five outs early on.
Yep.
You're using your middle reliever guys early on,
yep.
And then once you get into the sixth, because, I mean, you think about the Braves and the night shift that they had a couple years ago, and it was like you got them to the sixth inning, and it was bang, 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 7, 8, and 9. You know exactly who you're going to face, and you just found a way to shut them down. That's exactly what they're going to try to go with. I would be surprised if Los Angeles is able to close it out tonight. That being said, would I be that surprised? I feel like the Yankees will find a way to get one. Aaron Judge has to find a way to step up and be any sort of help to that Yankee offense.
Yankees fans may burn down the stadium if they don't win tonight and get swept in the Bronx. Ooh, brutal, man. I wouldn't hate it, but it is what it is. You can catch that right here on ESPN 106.7 coming up tonight. Christian, appreciate your time today, man. Always a blast. You'll be back on Friday.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Tomorrow, I'll be back 2 to 4. We'll have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, and we'll have Double D, Daryl Dapperich, on the show as well. He'll join me in hour 2. That's all tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.